Good morning, everyone. We'll make a start, otherwise we're going to run later and later. My name's Judy Anderson. I'm the Learning Bank Coordinator for Middle and Senior Years in South West Metro District. And it's my very great pleasure to introduce you to the Middle Years Learning Unit from Lockridge North Primary School. They're all going to introduce themselves, but firstly I'd like to introduce Graham Wegner, who's the ICT coordinator at the school and responsible for a lot of the leadership around their interactive whiteboard. So thanks, Graham.
Thank you. Thanks, Judy. I'll do a quick brief introduction so you can just get a face to each person who's going to present. As I said, Judy said, I'm Graham Wegner. Other presenters are going to include the rest of our Middle Years Learning Team, Annabelle Howard, who's here, Margaret Tasson, Trent Clayton, Natalie Brook, all teachers in this unit we call the Middle Years Learning Unit. And our presentation is on new technologies focus. Heard a few times during this conference about the concept of the digital native, and so that was taught out and engaged with the digital native. And our focus is on the use of this piece of technology, which is an interactive whiteboard. So hopefully by the end of the presentation we'll show you a little bit about what the interactive whiteboard does, how we've used it in our classrooms, and some of the facts that you need to know about behind the thinking that we've come across to make up with that. On your seats you'll have noticed you've got a sheet, a little bookmark we call it, which is like this, or that looks like this, exactly like this. On it there we've decided if we're going to preach innovation and technologies, we better make sure we back it up. So the whole presentation is actually put on an editable website called a wiki. Who's heard of a wiki before? A few people? Okay, so the wiki address is just down there. A wiki is basically an editable website where multiple authors collaborate. And so we've put all of our presentation on there. Later on, we're even recording this as we go. So we'll put the audio up later on. The slideshow will be up there in a couple of formats. And a lot of websites and a lot of tools that we refer to will have hyperlinks on that website so you can go and access it. And you can also actually take the time, register and comment and give us some feedback. So the whole idea is that this presentation just doesn't stop and end at 12 o'clock today, but it can grow and you can have conversations with us if you think it's particularly relevant for you or your school. On the back there's some contact details about the key people, including our sales rep who supplies us with these boards, and also too if you want to email me and ask me any questions or check on our website we set up as well, a blog. So the way that the wiki works, and I can only provide you the screenshot here because we don't have internet connection today, and basically there's navigation down the side here which tells you information about our abstract, what we set out to do, information about our team so you can contact any one of these people individually, our presentation, so you'll see a lot of the dot points that come from this presentation will be there, links to different things that are useful, our resources, so if you hear us quote, for instance, Mark Kretzky today, there'll be a link on there that you can go and read the actual article that we're talking about, so you can actually get a deeper context. There's information about our interactive whiteboards, who to contact, a bit of information there, and problem-based learning we refer to briefly, but it's a big initiative in our school, and particularly we use it a lot in terms of presenting kids' work back in the classroom. So hopefully that fills you in with that, but I encourage you, when you get home, have a look at this wiki and see what we've done there and see how it fits with what we cover today. Really, really quick introduction about the Middle Years Learning Unit. What is the Middle Years Learning Unit? You can see and we use an acronym, we call ourselves MILU. Okay? Usually people when they first get there sort of say, what's MILU? It sounds like Milo. Sounds like a drink, but it's actually an acronym. It's used so much around our school that it's a very common phrase. It grew out of, originated back in 1992, when the Junior Secondary Review was released in South Australia, and that was a review, I think it was almost the first beginnings of recognition that middle school students existed and that they needed a particular approach, a particular way of looking at things. And that was what they came with at the time. This is 1992, we talk about 14 years ago, but our position now is that things have changed. Things have changed dramatically. And what we're going to do, we're going to have a little bit of a look at this, explore this metaphor of digital immigrants and digital natives a little bit further.
Thanks, Graham. As Graham mentioned and we've heard at this conference previously, Mark Presby is a speaker, writer, consultant and designer in education, and he's popularised the two terms digital natives and digital immigrants. We now are teaching the era of the always on generation, the net generation, the digital generation. There's many different names for them. But these two terms are, he uses the terms to describe the differences between teachers and students of today. Earlier in the year, Graham and I heard Mark Presby talk, and this allowed for a really solid understanding of how powerful this metaphor is and can be used to improve learning engagement in the classroom today. Our students today are all native speakers of the digital language, of computers, video games and the internet. Just to sort of expand on the characteristics of what digital natives are, they are used to receiving information. They work at Twitch speed, they are really fast. They like to multitask. I'm sure you know students or your own children who can have 10 windows open at once. They can be texting, chatting on MSN, doing their homework, listening to their iPod, thousand things at once with the television on in the background. Digital natives prefer graphics before their text. They like multimedia. They're not afraid of technology. They give everything a go. They have no hesitation. They thrive on instant gratification from the digital things that they're working with, and they like frequent rewards. Through this, it's unlikely that our digital natives are going to change and go backwards for us. We're going to have to move along with them. The single biggest problem facing education today is that our digital immigrant instructors, who speak an outdated language, that of the pre-digital age, are struggling to teach a population that speaks an entirely new language. One of Mark Presby's resources is Don't Bother Me, Mum, I'm Learning, which is a where we've got a lot of references from the way that we have approached this. Some of the characteristics of a digital immigrant are that they do adapt to their environment, but in that they have one foot in the present and one foot in the past, and they're trying to sort of catch up to where they're heading. For digital immigrants, internet is the second option for information. It's not their first option. Many digital immigrants need support to take their technologies. They like step-by-step instructions. They like to write notes. They're a little bit more cautious. A couple of the examples that Mark Presby gives, which I'm sure we're all a little bit guilty of at times, is that digital immigrants like to print their emails. Whether that's for future reference or just to double-check that they don't forget. Sometimes digital immigrants also like to make that follow-up phone call about an email. Did you get my email? So he just gives a lot of really good real-life examples of how, even though we're using technology, we've still got that one foot in the past, that we need just that reassurance with that. One thing digital immigrants also notice is that the change is faster and faster. While our natives keep up with the Twitch speed, they notice that it's just moving faster and faster. And I'm sure that you can think of some of your own examples that describe that. Through this process of this presentation and for our own school's information, we actually surveyed our digital natives, all of our Malu students, and also us teachers, to see the difference out for us as immigrants of what sort of information we could come up with just to show that this is true. This is what we noticed with our own. In our setting, in our Malu team, we noticed that every native owns an average of 2 game consoles. We thought that was fairly amazing. We only have one immigrant gamer, who I won't name, but he does own one or two, I'm not sure, game consoles. None of our immigrants owned MP3 players. The top 3 things that immigrants do online were they go online for news and information, for email and for buying things online. Therefore, I can understand why eBay is so popular. But the 3 things that the natives do was email first, and this was just relevant to our setting. They like to go on the net for websites about movies, TV shows and music. And the other thing, that the third popular thing, was playing games online or downloading games. Just closely on that list was MSN and chat lines, was the number 4. One other thing about back to the MP3 players was that already half of our natives owned MP3 players. So one of the big things there is that their music and listening habits are very different to ours. Just to finish off with another Mark Presby quote, just to take us to the next step. Today's students are no longer the people our education system was designed to teach. From the description of digital natives and digital immigrants, and also from our survey information, you can see that this is where we were thinking.
So the next part is if our students have got different learning needs, and if they actually live in a connected world, our thing is, what do we do about that? How do we get our kids moving in the right direction? How do we make sure that we actually connect into their world? And so our path that we chose was interactive whiteboards. We actually tied this back to our school vision, the school vision several years ago, and you can see it's due for review fairly soon. But the up-to-date technology was part of the students and the parents and staff identified at the time. So with that in mind, we thought we would go down, well actually after a lot of exploration, we went down the path of interactive whiteboards, implementing technology successfully into the classroom. And what you're seeing now, I'm going to take you through a few of the things here. What's an interactive whiteboard? Because not everyone is necessarily familiar with them. A lot of people have heard about them. They think they have a little bit of an idea about what one is. So there are three main components to an interactive whiteboard, as you can see. The board itself. The first thing is the board itself, which is wall mounted on a stand. And as we just demonstrated before, it can actually be set up really, really quickly. We found that out in the back when we only had 10 minutes before you guys were all due in here. Second thing is you need a computer with the whiteboard software installed on it. In this case, it's Active Studio. The good thing about an interactive whiteboard is it can run any Windows or Macintosh-based software, depending on what you're using. I've just got this hooked up to my laptop back here, and it will run any program off my laptop easily. And it has a data projector which displays, which has to be powerful enough for a normally lit classroom. We're just using the ones here at the convention centre, and that one seems to be doing just fine, but we also have another one there ready to go as well. A few things that you'd need to consider is laptops or desktops. If you were thinking about using one of these in your classroom, our school went down the laptop lane because we felt it was really important for teachers to be able to take ownership of this new tool in the classroom, that they could then prepare resources away from the classroom, and they would improve their own technology skills. It's one of the big pushes, one of the big things on is that teachers' skills will improve by engaging with this technology every day. Well, you know, in a traditional classroom, you could argue they can choose to not worry about it if they wanted to. If you've got this resource here, which is a reasonable investment in money, then teachers start making the time investment, particularly if they've got a laptop, it makes it a lot easier. Troubleshooting support's really, really crucial. Teachers don't have access to troubleshooting support. Their hands go up in frustration. They can't use it, and the students are disappointed as well. So you really need good backup technical support, and the teachers themselves need to have a willingness to learn basic troubleshooting, including remembering how to turn the board on. That happened one day with me. A teacher came and said, "Oh, can't turn the board on. So I went to the science room. It was, and that's when we discovered the board wasn't turned on. So once she got over that, then that was a lot better. Sharing resources is still an area we're still grappling with. We're still not quite sure the best effective way to do this, but you have to think about that. If people are producing all this different stuff, what's a way to store it so everyone else can access it in on the staff? And possibly share it with an outside community as well via the website or whatever. Ongoing training for teachers is really, really important, because if teachers don't have the training, then they don't feel confident, and they get to certain stages, then they get proficient, they want to learn more, and because then they can pass it on to their kids, and their kids can get involved as well. And we've set up things like we've had just-in-time training, we've had time spread out of time, we've had buddy system where teachers are buddy up with each other. We also used online resources like Atomic Learning, which has little online tutorials which are really great to go through at their own leisure. And the other factor is really important, to document your journey along the way. On the handouts you've got there, we've got an address on the back called activeboarding.blogspot.com. That's a website where I've done a lot of work in documenting our journey since the beginning. In fact, it even goes back, if you read back through the archives, you'll even find the frustrations of setting up a first board and the things, the sort of thinking we went through. Really important to document your journey, and we're lucky that we're also getting a connection to some official research by Flinders University, and a consultancy with the Technology School of the Future, so that we can build some wider support for interactive whiteboard programs across other schools. Really important. And the big one that everyone wants to know, how much does it all cost? That's really the first thing. So for an average classroom, rounded figures, these are very rounded figures, and based on the model board we chose to purchase. Our interactive whiteboard, $2,500 to about $2,600. This is a slightly bigger one. One of our classrooms has got slightly smaller ones. There's actually about $60 difference between the different sizes. They've even now produced a 95-inch one for school auditoriums, but I don't know whether many schools would want that. And data projector, depending on how well lit your classrooms are, $1,500 to $2,000. You don't have to write these notes down if you don't want to, because they'll be all on the wiki. In fact, this presentation will be up in a week, but if you want to write them down, sure. Laptop, $1,200 to $1,700. First time we invested in sort of cheaper laptops. We sort of regretted that a little bit. Annabelle in particular had ended up one that sort of was a bit citrus flavoured. And so she's now got a better one, $1,700 ones. Far better. It's worth investing in good equipment for your teachers if you want them to use it a lot. Installation, depending on the type of room you've got, $800 to $1,000, depending on the tricky configurations, what sort of walls you've got, where you want to mount it within relationship to your room, etc. And also, training. Training, in our case, when we purchased ours from Promethean Commander, our training is actually included in a lot of the board purchases, but that depends on how many boards you purchase, but you still have to factor in the fact that you've got to put in TRT release, relief teacher release, in order to get teachers to be able to attend the training. Not always after school. Okay, what we're going to do now is we'll just talk a little bit about Mark Kretzky's model of technology implementation. I forgot to put a little thing on it, okay. I'll put this back up here. Mark Kretzky's technology implementation, we're quoting him yet again. Again, if you want to read the article that this comes from, it's on our wiki. He always says there's four stages. He likes to keep things simple. I really like about reading his stuff. It makes it really simple to follow. Any technology, he says, regardless of whether it's an MP3 player to an interactive whiteboard to a laptop, you start by dabbling. You play around with it. You just do a few things here and there. Your second stage is old things in old ways. You sort of replicate the past. Old things in new ways. Okay, and he sort of goes on that sort of way. Old things and new ways are very different again. We're starting to come up with unique ways. I'll show you some examples in a minute. And finally, what we're aiming for, utopia, is new things and new ways. The sort of new learning that wasn't possible before this sort of technology came along. Okay, and the article is there. Okay, so let's start with dabbling. When people start dabbling, they'll start with this. They'll start with a little game. Snakes and ladders, and so you can use some of the fantastic tools they've got here. Yeah, let's roll the dice. Okay, let's move the counter, and so you can select the right tool. Let's get rid of that. Select the right tool, and you can move things along. And so you can have a bit of fun with your class, just getting them used to tools. You can hold them with different things. And so that's a good way. It's just playing around, using the technology the first time, getting used to the different functions of the different things that are on here. And people usually move from dabbling to tool experimentation, where they start to use some of the different tools that are on here. There's handwriting recognition, so they might decide to write something like, and have it turn to text, if you have to turn it on. Better, much better. And you can, they tend to just work out what all the different things are. You've got lots of different tools here. You can bring up your keyboard and your calculators and your ruler. So people just play around with the technology and get used to it. Okay, so they play around with the technology, get used to it, get familiar with it. Then you're ready to move on to the next thing. Old things in old ways. Okay, so old things in old ways. And Mark Kretzky pointed out, he said, look, when television was first set up, they mimicked the past. They set up television studios were basically like sitting in a theatre with great seats. And so they put, it was a bit like redoing the old theatre. So that's how teachers start out with this. So interactive whiteboards make things that we've always done more attractive or easier to use. So everyone using an interactive whiteboard tends to spend a little bit of time at this stage. So a couple of examples I've got here are things like I used to do mental with my class, my Year 5, 6 class. So by doing it this way, I could reveal it one at a time, help the visual learners instead when I was doing just a simple mental test. And then great fun afterwards, the kids can then say, come up and they'll do the answers. So that's an old thing. A traditional way of doing things. Another thing might be you're covering a maths concept. An interactive whiteboard then suddenly becomes something where you can actually use the tools a lot easier. Okay, we're doing area, and I want to actually show and then measure that. So that becomes a lot easier than trying to fiddle around on an ordinary flat surface whiteboard. Then you move along to old things and new ways. A couple of examples here. Some of the interactive activities. I'll leave that one to last time. If I click on that one, it opens up and you can actually see the interactive activities, so you can actually see what both plots are saying. Oh no, I haven't changed it. I haven't played with this one that much. But there's lots of different activities all built in for that. And this one here, middle school, you've always got to cover this. Growth and development. So now you've got different things. Okay, let's try out. If I don't know my things. Yes.
Okay. That's what happened.
Didn't get the thing wrong. Okay. So interactive activities are new ways of doing things. Okay. Then finally, you're working towards, like I said, utopia. New things, new ways. Got a few theories about that. I'm not totally sure what it's going to look like because we're still working towards that. So the big challenge at this stage is part of the problem is we don't even know what it looks like until these things are invented, initiated, and pioneered in classrooms. It's very tight in the new ways we can access information. Okay. The fact that teachers are no longer experts in knowledge. And a big move from using interactive whiteboards mainly as a teaching tool, which is where you start, and hand it over to the kids as a learning tool. And I think it's tied with information literacy, and when it crosses over towards where schools work towards one-to-one access. Maybe technology might end up with something like this. This is just a flip chart that I've designed. These are called flip charts. And the whole idea is it reveals underneath, oops, whatever the right tool. Okay, so if we're talking about digital information literacy, and we're talking about using search engines like Google, and we might get present to them in a regular way of doing a search, and this sort of tool then reveals information about it. So the kids can actually take control. So they can look under there and say, well, that's what a URL is. These over here are ads that companies pay have a keyword, because kids don't necessarily know that. They think, oh, Australia, that must be a good thing. But they're not quite sure what sponsored links mean. How many web pages contain this word? So what I've done is created a resource where kids could control it, kids could talk about it, and then go away and use it and hopefully become more information literate. I think that's where we're heading. Okay, so impact on our classrooms. What we're going to do is hear a little bit from some of our teachers here, and they're going to give you just a little example, a little sample from their classroom about the sort of things they've been involved with. We're going to start with Mara Council.
One of the ways students in my room use the interactive whiteboard is for the presentation of current events. Students access breaking news from the internet, and using graphics or images in the library, they prepare flip charts which illustrate their news. Rather than me tell you all about it, hi, I'm Reuben, and let's hear from you.
Whiteboard makes it better and easier to learn, because you can use different programs, such as Active Studio and Internet Explorer.
Here's actually Reuben and his team. They're searching for news, putting their presentation together, obviously the sporting news and the world's weather. Is Ash all right? Well, I'll say it.
Yes.
She actually...
Can the teachers present work on the flip chart and the children can work on them? I love to draw on it and use images to make up my charts.
Here she is using the many colours and pen thicknesses that are available on the toolbar. She's actually getting graphics and she's incorporated with an image from the library to make the perfect setting for that all-important toilet paper ad. Okay? And last but not least...
Yes, I enjoy having the whiteboard as it makes it a lot more wow during current events. I really enjoy making flip charts. I sometimes use the internet and sometimes use the library. I prefer the library as it is a lot more accessible. I get images including faces, maps, people, and sometimes animals, and I sometimes use the collection of pictures off of the internet. I prepare my flip charts during recess and lunch, and I even stay behind after school one day to do them.
Alex actually made a series of 8 charts based on this template to illustrate his news. Actually, having to present an oral and a visual presentation using the board really has engaged my digital natives. They absolutely love it. As Alex says, it makes it a lot easier to interact with the task and it makes it a lot more fun to learn. Over to Trent.
Yep, Trent is the newest addition to our Milu team. He only received his interactive whiteboard at the week 10 of last term, so he's actually only been working with it for 2 weeks. And let's hear what he said about his new classroom tool.
Yeah, it certainly changed the way that I've actually done some of my work. I found that students are much more engaged by getting the board because it's a lot more of a hands-on sort of thing, and they can change the colours that they're running. Every time they come up, they change the colour from black to pink and all this sort of stuff. They're willing to get up and have a go, whereas normally on the normal whiteboard they would really struggle to come up because they wouldn't want to get it right or wrong this time. They come up and simply have a go. So this is one of the first things that I did. I did an alphabetical order task where I made up this program, this and got the kids to work it out in their books first, and then we had a decision where they, some of them came up at a time and were able to put them in the right spot. And it's just a very simple one where they could come along and move it. And the best thing about it is when we finish, we just close it off and it's ready for the next year or the next time I want to use it. I don't have to rewrite it or recopy it. Okay, it saves a whole lot. I don't think I've been to the photocopy room probably twice this term, whereas normally it's probably about 20 times already at this stage. Another example that we did was a health topic where we did a brainstorm activity, and this way, even though the kids write in their books and keep a record of it, we can put it back up here at the end of the, at the beginning of the next lesson, and we can always add some more information to it. We can add some more things that we found out about a disease or a disability, and the kids brainstormed with us, we wrote it up, they found the dictionary meanings that they wanted, and then we went to the next page where we thought about, well, what does it mean? What do these sorts of things mean? So they went off, found what the answer might have been in the dictionary, and then again we had these where we can move them up and down to reveal the answers to see if they were right or if they were wrong. And then we more some more brainstorming, and we've added to this list since this was done, and it's great records we can keep going back to. We can use it the next time or the next year or the next couple of years as a starting point and just keep going on without having to have lots of paper or sit down later on and try and write it down ourselves.
So that's
Save it as a file. There's a freeware thing called Active Student, which you can distribute to all the kids in the class. We haven't necessarily got to that stage yet, but you could, and then they could even produce their own at home and bring them to school, and then same thing, email them or bring them on USB drive.
So basically what I'm hoping for the next 6 months to the end of the year is getting a bit more comfortable with some of the other tools that there are, working with my buddy a bit more and hoping that she'll help me out. And also finding out what students can actually do, because some of them had the board last year in their rooms and are a bit better off than what I am. And also hopefully they might even teach me a couple of things about what I don't know yet. So, Annabelle.
Okay. Annabelle Howard, another one of our teachers, had the opportunity, thanks to her well-developed interactive whiteboard skills, to work with another school's middle school students. She'll briefly outline that involvement and explain how student-initiated curriculum can be meshed with the use of an interactive whiteboard.
Our school was approached by Grange Primary School to help out with a group of their middle year students who were working on roundtable assessments or roundtable conferences. And through that process, these students work for a restricted amount of time, about a term, and I can see Anne, she's the teacher that I work with. So I don't want to go into too much detail about the actual tasks that the students did, but they need to present this topic to an audience, and that's an audience of family and their class teacher and a community member. But they were also presenting at a conference and were very conscious that they wanted to incorporate ICTs into this project. So because it was a presentation, just like Mark said, it is a wonderful opportunity for the students to present their work. Now, the Grange students had already done a lot of preparation. They had done iMovies, they had done PowerPoints. They had a lot of their project already done. So I came in and spent half a day with them to actually show how, from the work that they had done, how they could use the interactive whiteboard for their actual presentation of the project. It was a wonderful experience for me. I worked with a great bunch of six students. They were IT savvy, so I only needed to sort of half mention it and they knew what I was talking about. They just really liked the multimedia approach. They had already done that in their free choice. They had done videos, they'd done PowerPoints, those sorts of things. So I just want to go through a few of the skills that I taught them to show how they could use this. So one of the things, as Mark showed you, was that I just taught them very quickly how to add a sound effect. So I got this dog picture from the library. So their topic may have been Fiji or something like that, or netball. And they found a lot in the library, or they could import it from the web. And I showed them how to add a sound effect, because they could record their voice and put their voice behind the picture, like Mark showed you. So, and the picture and the sound effect are all in the library. So it was just a simple example to show them. The board, when you present, has layers, so you can layer up all your things. So the example here is the duck, and you've got the sign behind. So I taught them how to layer. These are all quite complex skills, skills that we only recently learned at the beginning of this year. So we had our boards for a term before we got to this sort of next stage of the multimedia approach to the boards. They picked this up in probably less than an hour. They just, things that we all went back the next day and said to each other, remind me again, how did we get that sound? They were just amazing in their ability to pick this up. And that really reassured me because I was going and I was going to come back a couple of weeks later to see how they went with it. And I had great confidence in their creative ability to take this as far as they wanted. So that was really great. I was also very conscious that they'd done a lot of work. They'd done the PowerPoint, they'd done the eye movements and those sorts of things. So I also showed them, once again, how to link an object to a piece of different software. And this is linking to a PowerPoint presentation. And so they could have this particular slide on their page, then they could link that to their Trivo. And that meant that as a presentation tool, they could link to all the work they had done. The really positive outcomes for me were that the students had, they used their independent learning skills. It was a student-initiated project from Grange, and through that they could use the board to further develop those skills. They were particularly creative. Believe me, they put the duck and the dog to shame. Like, they were just very simple examples, but they had world trips with photos and their voiceover, those sorts of things. They were able to adapt and adopt the skills to their skill level. So once they got into familiarisation with the toolbar, they took it away. They were very computer savvy, therefore they were very quick to pick up the skills, which I've already pointed out. Me personally, as a teacher, it was also a wonderful project to work on. It was a very good opportunity for me to cement my skills. These aren't skills I've actually taught to my own class. They don't know how to do them, but this group of six do. Working with a small group of students enabled them to use the board, and it gave me some more techniques that I could use with my own class. It was an opportunity to share our experience as a Milo team and go to Grange and see what their business team do. And also it gave me ideas to use with the class and also to share with my Milo colleagues. So, yeah, I'd just like to say thank you very much to Grange because it was a great opportunity for me and I wish them luck because they're presenting at a conference.
I'm going to hear from Natalie Brooke, who's the dubious privilege of sharing a class with the ICT coordinator. Her class has got the youngest group of students in Miley, but sometimes they demonstrate the highest use of ICT, those in the high, they quickly pick up skills often. But being part-time often means responding to learning started by the other tandem teacher and designing learning on the fly. So Natalie's going to briefly talk about the interactive whiteboard and how it can be used for successfully just-in-time learning.
The pitch maps that we have all seen are excellent examples of how this program can be used within the classroom, but quite often they do take some time and preparation beforehand. It also can be used as a spur of the moment tool. You don't always need to spend 2 or 3 hours preparing a slide just so you can get the students interactive. Just a couple of quick examples. I was doing portraits in art and I wanted the students to be able to draw their portraits in a form of cubism. I did a quick Google search, came up with a few slides on the internet that showed the students what cubism actually looked like before they actually embarked on their own drawings in the cubism form. These images have been then photographed and put into a flip chart, so it's in Active Studio, the picture's there, and I don't need internet access now and I can use them for future use. And that would take about 3 minutes to do all of them. One night I set some homework on unjumbling sentences and the students came back the next day and said, help! No, we didn't. We found this quite challenging. So I was able to then, using the pen tool and the hand recognition tool, I wrote each word and each individual sentence up on the board, which then turned it into typed text. And then the students were able to come up, use the pen tool, and they can then come up and move them around and work as a whole class to put the sentence put the words into a meaningful sentence. And just incidentally, after they were able to do that, we turned it into a letter writing activity because all the sentences formed a letter of complaint. But it's not just one person coming out here and doing the moving of the words around the sentences. Actually, they get here and they go, oh, I'm writing to, and then they stop and go, oh, I don't know what else to do now. So what the others in the class do, they're all watching and intercepting at the same time, saying, oh, but if you move this word over here, put banking in between telephone and system, and they all engage, and then someone say, oh, can I have a go now? And so you get three or four students working on the one sentence at a time, and the whole class interacting and watching. So it just turned into a incidental letter writing activity, which I was then, I just went on and did this during the lesson. And this was, none of this was planned or prepared, it just happened on one day due to something that came up. And that's, all this stuff is really handy because classrooms are very dynamic and things are always changing and students are always asking questions and throwing new ideas into the mix all the time. So to be able to use this tool on the spur of the moment and say, hey, well, that's a good idea, let's see what we can do with it. So that's how you can use it on the spur of the moment.
Thank you, Natalie. Just to really quickly wrap up, because we're out of time, just to be aware that there are lots of emerging technologies that are coming out. A lot of them are web-based in middle school classrooms that could be really useful using a tool such as this. And some of the ones I've listed there, all of these on the wiki have a link back to the actual tool website where you can actually find out a bit more about it. iVid is a well-known Apple program. PhotoStory is a popular Microsoft one. Rocky is a web-based activity. I'm particularly keen on things like blogs and wikis and Google Maps. And you've got lots of other different useful things. For instance, Google Earth is really fantastic on interactive whiteboard. We had a live internet connection, that'd be something you could spend hours doing that. And a few other bits and pieces. So I've just put a little list there that you can refer back to later. If you go into the wiki, you can explore them at your own leisure. And I'll leave you with a final quote, a great quote, and I think it's a really good one. Dave Warlick is a well-known presenter and futurist thinker in America, and I think this sort of sums things up really well, his quote there. And our teachers have used the interactive whiteboard in this way to improve their own technology skills. Our students have had more engaging learning presented to them, and we've often learned together, and we believe we're only scratching the surface of the potential. We believe interactive whiteboards have a place in middle school classrooms. Our students, our teachers, will not do without them now. It's going to become an important cog in our learning journey. Thanks for taking the time to listen to our journey. As you can tell, we're only just gathering momentum. And thank you.